ladies and gentlemen, and goblins, etc., 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 welcome once again to the Professional Goblins Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Scott. With me, as always, is...
Mike Mother, who is dealing with the Twitch playing a very loud advertisement at him.
Also with us?
Yep, and I'm Savannah Broadway, and this is my co-pilot, Pelly.
And today, we have a very special guest, who is...
I'm Liz Liddell.
So Liz, tell us, who are you? Why do people care? Trust me, they will care.
I'm an editor in the RPG industry. I've been a freelance editor for about over 10 years now, and have just started doing a little bit of writing as well.
See, some people end up the other way around, and you're just like, not editing school, and I'm like, oh my god, I love you, thank you so much. You make me my tez into those.
Hopefully your autocorrect does that for you, but yes, I my job is to make everyone I work with look really, really good.
It's important.
Trust us, we need it.
Having now been on that side of it, I agree. I write some dumb stuff.
Well, here's the funny thing is, when I work with my editor, because he started writing too somewhat recently, a year or two back, and he was just like, I'm like, Ian, come on, we have to get Ian on the show at some point. You go, Ian, you're doing the same things you accuse me of. He's like, I can't edit my own stuff. And I'm like,
It's so true.
And I found
like,
I can
if you
edit.
Want to be able to do it at all, you have to leave it for at least a week. And
at
even
least,
then.
Yeah.
Well, change the page background, change the font size, change the font type. And it, there are ways
to it upside down and backwards and standing on your head. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but I was going to say, I use a Canadian guy because I can push him around and he'll take a ridiculous amount of shit. So, like, that's what I was looking for an editor. I was like, who will be just obscenely patient with me, Canadian?
I'd say that's my Ian with me. But yeah, I found that I could edit. I'm like, wait, I'm not as bad as I think I am because, wow, I'm not terrible at this because I'm the one writing. And people keep giving me junk because they're like, you make so many errors in like spelling and stuff. I'm like, let's just do this by volume, though. Like, I put out this much material every week and... this much of it's wrong, and you guys put up this much, and you know this much is wrong. Wow, that's not bad, you know.
Yeah, so, per capita.
Per capita, I'm not bad, but just enough volume. So, if you guys don't know, we do for the first time viewers. Oh my god, you're in for a treat. We do a bit of a segmented show. We have a few sections, and we have a. We're gonna skip a review this week. We got a book. We're gonna give them some feedback. It'll be good. But the second section, oh yes, Mike, in the future, editing, look at this, is a segment on your favorite character that you're currently playing or a lesson you kind of learned as a GM. So does anyone want to go first for this?
I will.
I'm still between characters, so you go on, Mike.
Okay. So I played in a 5e game that was run by, what's his name? Eric Lang, he's the sword. I think it's the Sword Quest RPG guy. He's a nice guy. He's up in the Northwest. He's part of that crew. And there's a new group, and I wasn't really sure what to play. So I was like, okay, I'll play like a dwarf. And it was another one of those times where I didn't really know what I was playing yet. I just was like, she's a lady and a dwarf and a barbarian, and she's got an axe, and let's go with
there
it.
There you go.
And I found a sheep.
So
Befev became the champion of sheep. And she like worshipped her sheep. And kept it for years, and it was like one of those sheep that like just never got shorn. She refused like anybody who in any way injured her sheep, which is massive because it had like such a huge hair and coat. She would just destroy them, and it became one of my favorite characters. And the group was a little bit weirded out by my Gonzo playstyle, but ultimately warmed to Befev. And it was just like a good reminder that it's if you're not really sure what to do and like you have trouble playing good characters, which I do, I have trouble playing good characters because I'm a good character in real life, it sucks. championing something is a great thing to do, and if you've never done it, you should play a character who just like is the champion. They don't have to be a paladin, like I think she was just straight up barbarian. They just have to champion something.
Yeah,
like
that's instant motivation.
Yeah
instant context for every situation. That's one of the reasons you said doesn't have to be a paladin. That's one of the things I like about playing paladins is when you give a new character a paladin, you're like, your guy's really passionate about, what is your deity?
Oh, and she started a church too. Yeah, that's right. She started a church to the sheep god. And like, it's like tons of sheep puns, and like, you know, you have the fleece life and all this stuff. Like,
so I mean, I think really what we're saying is that when you're building a character and you're not sure what to do, just take whatever you've got and go all the way with it.
11, yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, Mike, absolutely. So Mike, your characters have migrated from chickens to sheep?
Hmm. Befev came long before Fringe.
Oh, okay.
And Fringe so your, is way
your
beyond
characters
chickens.
Have obsessions with barnyard animals. Should we expect a cow night coming soon?
Oh, I did just release the rad cow. Or no, that's not yet. That's soon.
That thing I haven't released.
Yeah. No, the PDF is done. I have to do the treatments and get the print proof. But yeah.
So who is up next?
I've got one. Or sure. Liz, do you want to go first?
Oh, go ahead.
So while I was at Gen Con, to confirm, have I talked about Benjamin Woolworth yet?
I don't think so. Wait, was
the Woolworth estate?
Not the state.
No, of the estate.
Are you talking about the one where
the Woolworth mansion and you know, they had a huge enterprise at the department stores?
Not in this case. He was my Call of Cthulhu character at Gen Con, and I can't remember if I brought him up yet.
I don't think so. We haven't had that many episodes since Gen Con.
Yeah.
That's fair. Benjamin Woolworth was my pre-Gen Call of Cthulhu character, and he was supposed to be this, you know, daredevil who was fabulously rich and very handsome and was never happy if he wasn't in danger. And to put this in context... of course, in Call of Cthulhu, your attributes are out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing Pulp Cthulhu, so, you know, your stats were a little bit more oomphy. And Benjamin Woolworth had a 90 charisma.
Oh, jeez.
And a 30 intelligence.
Wonderful.
And he also had an 80% credit rating. So that's basically what I went off of. But this was a great example of... I was meaning to play him as the daredevil, but the roles just went elsewhere. Benjamin just kept critically or extremely succeeding sanity checks after seeing really, like, messed up shit. And so we decided, like, he's a sociopath. Like, that's why he's not fazed by any of this. Like, that's why he keeps, like, botching his sense motive equivalents. Like, he just doesn't care about other people. And then it turns out, through the GM, like, altering the plot slightly and all this, that the doctor who was in the party was Benjamin's doctor when he was a child, and he found out that he was sociopathic and hypnotized him to turn his murderous tendencies towards the good of the government.
So kind of dexterous here. I love it.
Yeah, and so it turns out that since this had been done, since he was so young... that he didn't have any personality of his own. Like, he was just this person that the doctor had created. And so that meant that he was a perfect candidate to be a Mask of Narlathotep. So it turns out that he was, like, the Red Viper, like, cult leader dude. He was the next incarnation of the cult leader. And I got to, at the whole, like, apex of the game, I got to turn into a snake with wings and fight the party. That's I was awesome. The most gorgeous snake, by the way. We were at Masquerade Ball when it happened, and when he transformed into a snake man, he still had his Oberon costume on. So he was Fairy King Winged Snake.
Even better.
And so I ended up fighting the party and then flying away into the night. And we got to write each other's epilogues. And so the actual, like... federal agent who was on the team, I got to write his epilogue, and it's like, okay, so you drop out of the bureau, you're really jaded now, and you're like single-mindedly hunting, you know, this monster who you thought was your friend and blah blah blah, and late at night, whenever you're on your fifth drink of scotch, you think you hear this because as the game went on, Woolworth's laugh got more and more awful. And by the end, he was just like this weird, laughing gremlin snake monster in a fairy costume.
That's awesome.
Call of Cthulhu, everybody.
Sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah. Liz, Scott, anybody?
Well, I'm actually in an interesting place. I'm kind of in between a bunch of games right now. But the one that I'm most excited about right now is we're starting up a Starfinder game because, of course. All these friends who've been hearing about Starfinder for months and they're like, we can play it now! Woo! So they're banging down my door to get me to run a game. So my spouse and I are co-GMing this game. So I'll be playing the majority of the time, but I'll be filling in as GM from time to time. So we're trying to figure out how do I play a character who can just sort of disappear for a while and it's not weird? And so in Starfinder, the game design is sort of set up that you have your own starship as the party. And so we've actually come up with the idea that I will play the ship.
I love it.
So sort of imagine if, think about Star Trek Next Generation Enterprise, so you've got that really distinctive computer voice. If that's an actual entity who can sometimes sort of possess an android body when necessary to like go wander around, that's the concept that I'm looking at.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool. What's her name in Andromeda was like that. The ship had an avatar; it could manifest and stuff. It was really cool.
And wander around when need be.
Will you be taking the pilot role or?
So we haven't sat down with the rest of the players yet because of the way roles work. I could see it working as a pilot really naturally. But I could also really easily do engineer. I could really easily do science officer, just whatever people need.
That's cool.
Cool.
Yeah, gives a lot of flexibility, which is nice when you have a newer group of players.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to collect your special rules for it at all, or is there enough in Starfinder that you can just like go right from the bang?
I think there's probably enough there that we can lay the foundation. We might have to do a couple of tweaks to whatever creature type I end up playing to explain why I'm not actually an autonomous entity.
Let's say that was something that my first read through, I'm like, I know what I'm writing. there's a few things I have for that book. I'm commissioned to write 3 Starfinder books at the moment, so I got a few things I want, and that was one of them. I don't think I'll be writing that one. Got lots of weapons, though.
So yeah. If you want a inspiration, I recommend the webcomic Zap. It involves the ship called Excelsior. No, my poster's not anywhere close. But the ship presents this holographic avatar who is Excelsior. And she picks her own captain and that sort of thing.
I choose you!
Yeah, pretty much.
You get to pilot me.
Ooh, baby.
I'll come along for a ride. The cargo bays around back.
Oh, there's so many. See, it's a gold mine. You have so many innuendos and puns you can throw out.
It will be great.
I'm gonna cut myself off right here, or I will go dark. PG-13.
So, lesson learned. Playing the ship leads to puns.
Oh, always. Almost everything leads to puns eventually. My fifth game didn't meet last week. It'll be hopefully meeting this Saturday, so I will have some stories for you guys next week of, Caspar the Crimson? But let's see. Previous game things. You made me think of something that isn't super game-ish, but it's interesting. We had with a sociopath, someone was running a site, and it was kind of a modern horror vampire-y thing, supernatural, but 10 years
is
before
it
supernatural.
World of Darkness again? Is this where you really?
No, it wasn't okay. That. It was right. A forum board with some rules and stuff.
The 4chan of RPGs.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. But it was a message board thing, and the site's been running for a while. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, you guys kind of need an antagonist, right? And they're like, yeah, sure. So I just got out of an aberrant psychology class. So I wrote up literally a textbook, like, down to the McDonald triad, urinates in his own bed because it's part of the triad, like, sociopathic serial killer, you could compare it to, like, Wikipedia or, like, research papers, and that is who I was playing.
The platonic serial killer.
He was the intelligent serial killer archetype, like, from psychology. Like, I could literally pull out the sources for it. And the stuff I did was just screwed up. Like, I think I had him, like, pin little skunks to trees and stuff. He liked to torture animals and weird stuff. And we realized too late that the person who was running the site and kind of GMing every thread was a Mary Sue. She was the best vampire who had the best powers and was the ultimate vampire because of all the powers, but she was still vulnerable and had more powers, and she could be a this and a that, and she was special.
I have all the powers.
Exactly, and it was just like, it was like textbook, and I'm sitting there like, I wrote a really interesting character. Here's how you do it. And everyone's like, oh my god, that's so creepy and wonderful. I love how you're doing this. And you're doing it all with, like, power level, like, one on the site, which was, like, the equivalent to, like, Robin when he first gets the costume. You know what I mean? Like, he is street thug, and, like, the guys on the site can't touch him. Because he's just doing creepy things and, like, setting him up, and it was great. And this chick just has this, like, and then I do this, and I solve the problem, and it's done, in, like, a post. And everyone on the site's like, that's not okay.
Excuse?
Like, and she's like, okay, fine, I guess I'll edit it. And I got kicked off that site, because she didn't like me.
Oh.
I played complete within the rules, I did everything, and everyone else liked me. She just didn't, and I left, and I'm like, I got kicked off the site for being a good psychopath, yay!
it feels
all cold and shivery and deathy inside. So, but yeah, it's sometimes you don't even need to have those big stats. And sometimes a bad GM can ruin a game. So.
Here.
Yep.
So true.
So, Mike, I think the next one here is working on your favorite project that you are working on. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mike, editing. We do that,
yes,
so Mike
editing.
Knows where to cut the time code.
Yeah, it saves me a little, like, 20 minutes later. But, I'm working on Balian Tor, which I mentioned earlier. Which was like a like a stretch goal for the 2099 Wasteland Kickstarter. For anyone who doesn't know, check out my website, mikemilo.com. It has lots of information on this and free PDFs. But 2099 Wasteland is a 5e campaign setting generator, sort of in the vein of Fallout, but if there were magic. Mm. And it's in the Hypercore universe. And I promised it a long time ago, and I'm finally getting around to doing it, and it's awesome. The cover art I am really, really love. I just put like the map because it's about like here's the first randomly generated map, and then you know generate more. That's how the thing works. And like here's how you play through it as like a long form example of play, and which is because that's what they all wanted. So I was like, okay, cool, let's do that. And so it's just like the map, and then Willem Shakespeare, who is this insane tribal leader of this like savages that worship William Shakespeare and his plays like Hamlet and Marchbeth. So you have to like go and watch them reenact
those classics.
Them. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, hello. Stuff like that. And see, that's one of the things you have to do to acquire them as part of your town. Yeah.
That's fucking beautiful.
I had a lot of fun with it. I did. And then there are rad cows, and like the artist who did it, like he only does line work now, though he finally got a tablet, so I'm gonna try to work him into color. But I'm starting him out. Like I like to pick out like people who are good. And he's like a friend of mine I used to play D&D with, so it's like it's double cool. And he just like nailed the shit out of the rad cows. They look so freaking weird.
Crazy,
and like
Mike.
And then
we're coming back to livestock again, man.
Yeah, I know. Man. Is this a fascination for you?
I mean, I grew up near the rural belt. I don't know what to tell you.
You like sheep?
But I use the actual eyes for cows, and they look more. They make the rad cow look more alien than it did before I added actual cow eyes to the color scheme.
I insist on a duck-based archetype, Mike.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe some kind of farmyard. It could make sense, because, like, natural resources are super important in 2099 Wasteland. So we can
That's
make a
true.
Druid archetype that, like, is about
barnyard. Like, barnyard fowl?
Yeah.
Or,
foul,
Oh man, I really want a like a cavalier order, the order of the goose.
Here, come here, hold up.
Just be an asshole always. Like chase people around, steal their bread,
bite them.
No, these are resilient as far as large fowl go.
Oh yeah,
and they're jerks.
They are such jerks.
My Christos, one of my writers, has a bunch of geese on his property, and he has to run to his car every day because of it. They attack him.
Geese are the only bird I have ever been bitten by.
But say, Savannah, I don't think that's true of you. Yeah.
That is not true of me. I have not been bitten by a goose, but it was not because of my own power. I was apparently feeding them bread as a small child, and they decide that they want to jump me and take the bread. And I got rescued, and it was, but I mostly get bitten by cockatiels, but, you know, not much.
And now you're like, sheep. I am master of you birds.
I welcome our bird overlords.
It's going to be machine overlords, I'm telling you. Hashtag machine overlords coming.
Machine bird overlords?
Oh, I can't wait bird to get sheens? Raptor legs.
Ooh, that sounds so good. Cool. Mike, can I give a preview of the Heresy Knight for my part?
The Heresy Knight? Oh, yeah, from Book of course, go ahead.
Yes.
I'd love to hear what you're doing with it, because I haven't seen it.
All right. So what, of course, all of the Paladin Oaths in 5e have tenets, which I really like as a fluff thing. And so what I want to do for the Heresy Knight is I want to make them practical. Like, this Askus is a
quick
world...
Quick sidebar. This is for the Book of Exalted Darkness for 5e, which is like the Book of Vile Darkness, but with a holy deco-punk aesthetic.
Okay, true. Sorry. But yes, Askus, the world that it's, like, based in, is literally, like, partially ascended to heaven. So, like, it's holy out the wazoo. And so you just can't have blatant, stupid bad guys and get anywhere. So the tenets of heresy are perversion. There's no virtue that cannot be turned in upon itself and corrupted. Enact this wherever possible in word and deed. Destruction. It is not enough to assault the minds and morals of those who follow the light. Their monuments must topple and their champions ground underfoot. Work through proxies if you must, but evil is best served by those who use their own hands. Practicality. Never let your own code stand in the way of striking a blow against heaven. Likewise, do not indulge in meaningless destruction when a proper target is present.
Sorry.
And putrefaction, which was my favorite. Remember that you are an agent of darkness in a world of light. Your very presence corrupts the world and sets it rotting. Therefore, do not carelessly throw away your life or that of those you have corrupted.
Ah, that is excellent, Savannah. Wholesale approval.
So, yeah, that was the thing. Practical evil. Like, you can't have, like, the Joker dashing in crazily because that's just not how it works.
And by the way, the Joker is totally a player option, and you can find the build on my website.
But there we go.
Yeah.
Also, he would technically fit under the Heresy Knight purview because there's a significant minority that just want to see the world burn.
Well, he's got the mad scientist class.
Oh, yeah. But he could definitely, like, give a nod to.
Yeah. Well, do you have any of the mechanics for the Heresy Knight worked out yet, or no?
I'm working on the oath spells and all that, because they definitely, like, there's a spot on the document that says, if they even get oath spells, and it's like, hells yes, I'm giving my babies oath spells, jeez, Mike.
Well, I mean, that's one of the ones I like to cheap out on, so, like, Samurai Paladins and Mists of Akuma get their magic ancestral swords, right? And then in Wasteland, Nuclear Knights, they get their power armor instead of oath spells.
Mm-hmm. So, like, that's fair. Yeah, I might do something interesting instead of that. I feel like a lot of the homebrew ones get both and it feels really broken.
Yeah, it's one or the other. Don't double up. Yeah.
One of my favorite things when we have a book of anti-paladin archetypes or Pathfinder. We just removed Plague Carrier on like every, or was it the Plague Blooded or the one that lets you be infected and not affected and be able to spread it? Like Plague Bringer or something? It's
so. Typhoid Mary archetype?
Well, that's already in Pathfinder for anti-paladins. But we replace it with a bunch of stuff, and the spells too. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Well, this is for 5e, but also, Axorman in the chat says that he also likes sentence about being evil smart, and that a heretic is not one that is obvious, unlike what 40k wants you to believe. But I will point out to you, sir, that there are like sneaky evil dudes in 40k, like, what the hell is the name of it? There's the academy that Ravenor is fighting against. I'm the only 40k junkie here, aren't I?
No, I am. Yeah. I just don't know what you're talking about.
Moloch was trained at it. It's like basically the anti-inquisitor academy, and they don't teach like chaos powers.
They teach you how to be the radical inquisitor thing.
No, that was a novel, and it was a cool novel. But that's about a dude in the Eldar library.
Novels, so I might not be the one I read.
Oh, specifically from the Ravenor shit. I'll look it up later.
But anyway.
Yeah. No, it sounds good. I can't wait to see it.
I'm thinking if minus oath spells, given their thing, since they're inherent heresies in Book of Exalted Darkness, that could definitely be a, like, you can totally awaken a heresy in somebody, and now they're, you know, attached to wrath or whatever.
Oh, check the spell list, because you're supposed to design that spell.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what I was okay. thinking. I'm like, do it, because that's part of why I want to give them oath spells, but I'm sure we can make it, like, a spell-like ability.
Oh, yeah, of course.
What is somebody saying in the chat there, Mike?
If I could play a game in this setting, I'd do the Heresy Paladin, so I had rules for myself on how to play, and so my personal moral compass isn't that bothered. I can be a minor scale nice, but still go for the large scale evil. Well, you're kind of like the inherent heresies that all the characters get kind of do influence your play. Like this is one of the reasons it's not Pathfinder, because one of them is lust. So when you get the opportunity to be lustful, you have to make a save or you go for it. It doesn't really matter what the opportunity is, right? And it's like that for wrath and pride and so on and so forth. But yeah, having more for the paladin is definitely cool. And everything you said, like the putrefaction thing, was dope. All the flavor you intertwined in it was top notch. That's why I'm going to pay you money for it.
Yay, money! Liz, do you have anything going on right now?
You know, yes, and I'm in an actually fascinatingly odd spot where I can't talk about any of it. Just
that
because
it's the
NDAs, I'm drowning in work, and it's either all things that haven't been announced yet, or they've been announced, but like they haven't been announced with author names, and so they're not out yet. So I can't really like actually say I've been working on them. But so that's been interesting. But it's been a lot of fun. I've been doing a lot of stuff for Starfinder, both with Paizo and with other companies, just because I've had the privilege of being able to work on it for the last year. I know it really well.
Cool.
It's fun. Jelly. It's a lot of fun.
I just got finished reading it, so. Here, we released the product right after we finished reading it, so.
Oh, right, well, you know.
I don't know, I gotta translate the hyperscore system to it, and I guess it's gonna be more difficult than I thought it was gonna be. Because I listened to, what is it, No Direction Beyond, is what they're calling it?
Yes.
Yeah, and they were like, transporting Pathfinder to Starfinder, like Pathfinder features are deadlier. It's like, shit. It's like all about hyperscores making you deadlier. So, like, yeah.
Kinda. I don't know. Hey, that actually is a great segue to the product I'm working on. My chair is also apparently listing to the right today. I have no idea why, but I may have to repair it later. So we're actually converting a bunch of little red stuff that people wanted converted over to Starfinder. We are not converting over Necropunk yet. It's really interesting seeing all the convergent design. We did Necropunk, which is biotech, sci-fi. We did it about 3 or 4 years beforehand. I'm like, that's literally the same way we did it. Oh my god! In a good way. Not in a, how dare you rip us off? But it's like travel. It's like, they're like, oh, you have to. You just like, are you in system? It takes about this many days. You add it. Is it out of system? It takes about this. I'm like, we did the thing, yay! and then I see, like, weapons, and I'm like, we did that one, yes! So it's really cool to see it. And a lot of their the skill changes, we did the same things with it. Vehicles we did entirely differently. I'm still not in love with the vehicle system, to be honest. There's too much of a right-hand, left-hand, not-talking thing going on.
I have thoughts about that as well. I think you're not going to be alone.
Like, we'll talk about more, but there's a thing with, like, size categories having very little effect in characters, but being a huge thing in ships, and I'm like, there's some, I don't know. Anyway, so we're converting over, we're doing two books, we're doing a book of racial conversions, of our greatest hits, so to speak, and a class one that of things that will fit, a lot of Gonzo stuff in there.
You said racial stuff. My brain heard it as Rachel stuff, and I'm like, is that a genre? I don't know.
No, we're doing Rachel over a lot of races.
Okay, so you're doing a best of.
Yeah. And the cool thing
Starfinder is cookbooks, come on.
There you go, I like it, Rachel.
I like it.
But yeah, we're doing a big thing on that. It's kind of fun to take some stuff I worked on like 6-7 years ago and be like, now I get to think of this as a sci-fi thing? Alright then, let's give it a shot. So I get to like do stuff I wrote, I'm like, oh god, why did I write this? This is terrible. And I get to rewrite it.
That's gotta be cathartic.
But it gives you another chance at it, so you can kind of like clean it up and bring it up to speed.
A lot of it doesn't need much editing. Everything needs editing. Doesn't need as much,
much!
No, it doesn't need as much like conversion stuff. It's like, change the term continent to planet is a lot of it. and like change like doc to space doc. But there are certain ones I've just entirely rewrote, like, nope, this doesn't work, but it's interesting, we're just gonna go for it. For those asking, we are not doing Stray Spell, and we're definitely not doing Stray Spells, because that's a whole book to itself, so we're not converting that over. We're not converting over the Kaiju or Giant Robot Rules from Gonzo. That's its own project. But we are
sounds
doing...
like a great project.
It's fun. Well, Gonzo 2 has most of our crazy fun stuff. But we are definitely going to convert over a few things. It's funny, we wrote this thing called Bakundu in one of our recent racial books, the one we put out for Starfinder. And we're converting over this one called Bakundu.
That's a much better name.
Bakundu. They only have three words in their language. Bakundu. But it turns out they're really similar to an idea we wrote a few years back called the Wug that everyone loves. So they kind of wrote, I'm like, all right, I guess we're writing something similar again. It's not a bad concept, and they're separate enough, but it's just one of those things. But yeah, that's what you guys can look forward to in the next few weeks. We got Alt Path Prestige coming out at some point. Nogwall's still almost done. Oh my god, we've been working on that. The logo's coming together. That's what I've been working on.
If they only have three words in their language, they must say so much with intonation.
They do. Bahundu are also very simplistic creatures. And they learned other languages later, but they were just like super chill, and people settled on their planet and didn't realize they were intelligent for a few years until Bahundu walked into their town like, well, this is nice, and they're like, who are you? Oh, we've lived here for a few years, and they're like, really? Yeah, we've just been over the hill, not really, just minding our own business. They're just like the super chill dudes. They're kind of like stoners a little bit.
I think you talked about them in
I did at one point, yeah.
Episodes. Yeah.
But anyway, so
nice.
Favorite project. Next thing is favorite.
Well, I was
going
to mention that Max is here, Savannah.
Oh.
Max watching. Max from Hypercore.
Gotcha.
Sniper rifle, Max. I need to have my sniper rifle, Max.
Yes, yes.
And he has once again lodged a complaint about my antagonistic game mastering style, which I maintain is not antagonistic. It is realistic, but whatever.
So is there like a GM's board that you can lodge those complaints with?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know.
It is on the show.
We always joke in my group that there should be a Yelp.
Yelp for reviewing game masters. What a great idea.
Yelp.
Like ratemyprofessor.com, but ratemygm.com.
Oh my god.
Yelp.
Oh my god, Max, there you go. Side project, ratemygm.com.
Yelp, make it happen, dude.
Mike, so we're doing that before or after we do the GMUD? The graphic mud that we were talking about way back when.
Yeah, no, I emailed him about it. I haven't heard back about that one.
I
researched it a little bit, and somebody tried it, I think, about 2 years ago.
Okay,
it didn't hold up. But I mean, they don't have a user base like he's already sitting on. I think 26,000 or 30,000 people or something. I don't know.
Anyway, so are we moving on to the next segment?
Do we want to rib on Max a little bit more? Oh, no, I want to mention that Max got his introduction to game mastering from me, and that I do it like I'm the PS3 and you're playing Grand Theft Auto. And most game masters do not do that.
Do we want to mention the time that my character went into the hypernet and like made him a fake Canadian citizen so he could acquire the sniper rifle legally?
Sir
and like
Barrington,
named him
I believe,
yeah like
name.
Barry Barrington or
yes,
something.
Barry Barrington, yes.
Yes.
And he was a lawyer, so it was double good. All right, yes, so moving on. Thank you for coming out, Max. That's cool. And I hope that college is going well.
Bye, Max.
I'm assuming he's on chat, right?
Yeah, he's in the chat. He's in the chat room. And apparently he's watching all our episodes, so that's like, way to go,
cool.
Dude. Like, awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
One of our like four viewers.
So we're all like waving here. Is this video feed live as well?
Yeah.
It is, yes.
Oh, so people are watching me right now. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, yes. Actually, they're watching the small thumbnail of you most of the time, unless you're talking.
Okay.
I'm your cameraman too, guys.
It's true, yeah. Scott hosts. It all runs through Twitch. But don't worry, our dozen of people will see you. It's gonna be dope.
It's dope.
But yeah, so for a new project, this is where we prop up stuff that we can't profit from. I'm gonna talk about the Starfarer's Companion. Because if you're getting Starfinder, that's a good one, because Owen was a lead designer. You would know, I always get it wrong.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's lead design? Okay, yeah. So he, like, picked out some stuff from Pathfinder that he knew people would want converted, and they released pretty much the same day. So if you want to play, I think, a Paladin or a Magus, they covered most everything. Or, like, a Vishyanka. Yeah?
Oh, shit.
Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I'll wait till I get it. Okay.
Make sure we're connected here. Hey guys, sorry about that. We are we came down for a few seconds. My Chrome crashed. So we are continuing on from Mike was pitching or was telling us about the Starfarer Compendium.
Yes. So the Starfarer's Companion is what it's called. It's a 234 page book, and it basically Owen, who was the lead designer, Owen Stevens. For Starfinder, picked out stuff from Pathfinder you knew people would want converted over. So if you want to play Magus or a lot of the weird races or a variety of different classes, it's there. It's great. It's $20 for the PDF. You can order a print. And I mean, it's a pretty good authority on the design because he was a design lead. So.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hear that's true.
Ooh. And as you were saying?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So I was... Sorry, I lost my train of thought in the gap. I'm the treasurer on the board of directors for the RPG Creators Relief Fund, which is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to helping game creators keep creating when stuff in their life makes it financially difficult to do so. And we've had some really, really great support coming in for the first half of this year, which puts us in this really strong position to review grant applications. And the timing is really good because there's a lot going on right now with, you know, with Houston having a lot of trouble. With most of the western third of the United States being on fire, which incidentally, we are getting smoke here in Ohio from the fires out west.
Wow.
That's coming across the entire country.
You know what's funny? Even though it's 100 something, it's not on fire here yet in Arizona. Well, north of the
state. Do you have anything to
is.
Burn in Arizona?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
We have it every year, like up north. I think we actually have something in Payson that's burning. But anyway, that's normal. That's not bad fire, that's good fire.
Right on. Yeah, prairie fires are, if controlled, they're not bad. Anyway, more to the point, and then with Hurricane Irma coming through the southeast, you know, we're in a place where a lot of game creators are in a place to be affected, and we're just in a really good place. So if I can shout out a little bit, I get nothing out of this. We're a nonprofit board, but if you are a game creator or you know a game creator who's struggling because of some of the stuff that's going down right now, send them on over. It's rcrfcharity.org, and put in an application. If you are not affected and want to support game creators, you can also go to rcrfcharity.org, and we do take one-time and monthly donations to keep our work going.
Awesome.
Yes, it's totally awesome.
I actually have a thing that's actually pretty close to that, if you're if you would let me segue into that. The
please.
Nazi Smasher, is that what you can talk about?
No, I'm involved in that somewhat, I hear. Mike, do you still want that picture of that golem thing?
Golem thing? Oh, no.
Okay,
I ended up
We didn't go with that? All right.
If you go prone, you have to make a save or you get sick. It's pretty
Okay. So the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund bundle is on drive-thru. The title's a little self-explanatory, but it's proceeds are going to that, so give it a look. There's like $400 worth of product in there. It's great, so give it a look.
What's the URL if someone wants to find that?
It is currently on the front page of drive-thru. But I don't
is that drive-thru RPG?
Yes, yeah. Drive-thru RPG.
I will put some URLs in the chat window.
We will put. I'm pulling it up for people to see. It is by Fainting Goat Games. I have never.
A great name.
It is awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's super solid.
They've been around for a while.
Mike's a fan. Between the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund and the
probably.
Coastal Bend Disaster Recovery Group Fund. I think that's pretty cool. Anyway, good on you guys, Fainting Goat Games.
Heck yeah. And I'm glad to see gamers as a community coming together to help people when stuff sucks. It's really, you know, it's sort of like we do all this, you know, this pastime, and some for some of us a career. that is based around sort of empathy building and putting ourselves in other people's shoes. So it's really nice to see that get put into action when we need to.
Definitely, definitely. Savannah, you got something this week?
I do not right now, actually. So I am good to move on if everyone else is.
I definitely am.
You can talk about... I guess it's not till the 30th. All right, never mind. All right.
Yeah.
Pathfinder, Starfinder, Nude Speculation. I've been unbelievably busy this week, so I have not read past where I got to the other time, which is the first or second page of themes. So,
do we want to go over a little bit of this? Because we've kept people going for a while here.
Savannah, have you gotten into it at all yet or not?
I have not. My kidneys have been ramping things up, so.
Boo.
It's exciting. Yeah, I'm on meds for it now, which is
well,
exciting.
That's good.
Here,
have you made Pathfinder stats for your kidney stones yet?
I haven't made them for the stones yet. I figure I'll make them for my kidneys. They definitely inflict con damage. I'm trying to figure out if it's per minute or per round. It probably depends. You may have to roll a percentile table.
Oh my god, you should work in kidney stones as a rules mechanic in Spiders and Souffles.
Oh god.
You know, I could.
You could.
I don't know that I want to talk about kidneys ever again once I actually like get rid of this problem, but we'll see. But yeah, no, I totally got to slightly baffle the pharmacist when I went to go pick up my meds for it, because what I got is it is a medication that was originally developed to help people with enlarged prostates.
Oh!
and not looking classically like someone who has a prostate, the pharmacist was very confused, but it turns out it dilates your plumbing in there and lets the kidney stones get out faster and all that jazz.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So that's my news. Luck.
So, Liz, as you
is it your favorite new project?
yeah.
Kidneys. So, Liz, as you got to be an editor on that stuff, can I pick your brain on a few things that were a little standing out?
As sure, much as please
you can
do.
Talk about it?
But yeah, absolutely.
So, you said you had some things that irked you too, so irk away. Without going too much into it, like I said, there's that weird disconnect between, like, size not mattering that much in player characters and mattering a lot in ships. The ship rules are really heavy to build things with, but once you start seeing the stats of them, you're like, okay, I see how this works, but I'm really scared that's going to scare off a lot of, like, new players or rules-light players. Like, to figure out the
Yeah, I can definitely see that, and I wonder how much of that is... that we're used to player character rules.
Yeah.
You know, and so looking at a class description is pretty straightforward for us, and then the starship system is just it's all new.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it's putting us into the shoes of someone who's not played an RPG at mm-hmm. all, who has to learn everything from scratch, and it is intimidating. And I think the reality of it is a D20 system is, and games derived from it are, they're heavy. They're you know, there's a lot to take in.
Yep, ask my wife when she tried to learn. But yeah, it's stuff like that. It's like the things that you have to learn kind of two systems for the game a little bit. But there's enough
right.
interplay that you get it, but that's a lot to keep in working memory for a person.
It absolutely is. We found in our group, in both organized play sessions and in my home sessions, that having a cheat sheet for Starship Combat helps immensely.
Yep.
I was wondering also if it might be handy, so in Vanilla Pathfinder, vehicle rules are incredibly unhelpful.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways. So I was wondering if you could, like, retrofit, like, if you wanted a vehicle of some sort to be more integral to your experience.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they do
yeah,
a good job.
I think you probably could. I guess it's probably worth pointing out that Starfinder actually has three sort of levels. You've got your player tactical, you've got your Starship Combat. There actually are specific vehicle rules,
yep.
Non-Starship ground vehicle rules.
Mm-hmm.
I will confess I'm not super similar with vanilla Pathfinder vehicle rules, but these strike me as being very
clunky.
Similar to that.
Yeah.
They're clunky. Yeah, and I don't know that non-Starship vehicle combat was not a huge focus in Starfinder.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are going to be way more excited about Starships, quite frankly, because that's more fun.
Cool.
They are much more exciting.
One thing I also realized was the class, like, design paradigms are, like, Pathfinder turned up to 11. Like, I love the Envoy, where it's like, you have the intro page with the artwork, you have the next page, which has a class table, and all of the class features. and then you have like 4 or 5 pages of talents, and I'm just
options.
Like,
yep.
I'm just like, yep, that's Pathfinder, that's like all Pathfinder right there.
Yeah, a lot. It reminds me a lot of the Investigator. It's like you have 3 class features, and then all of these things, or you know, yeah.
I mean, it works
pretty well in a couple different ways, though. You can sort of pick your own level of complexity.
I also like the themes, obviously. I love the whole way you can just, it blend it. I love the build thing at the bottom where it's just like, here's 10 ways to play the soldier. You know? Here's 10 mm-hmm. ways to be an operative. You thought this was only a rogue? You know? Tut, tut, tut. You know?
Yeah, and that's something that I really like that I think makes it a lot more accessible to newer players. Likewise, I'm really... some really nerdy things that I love about this book. There's a great character creation walkthrough at the beginning that yep. goes through and gives you examples of how to do stuff and shows you all the moving pieces so that if you've never played an RPG before and you've got this character sheet and you're like, ah! You know, you've got someone holding your hand and walking you through it. Likewise, we have a really badass index in Starfinder. Yep. And, you know, as an editor, that was sort of something we kind of dug into and made sure was working really well. And it came out really well, and I'm really proud of how it came out.
One of the other things I noticed...
One of the things I always credit Paizo with, because, like, the 5e books are nice, but their index is just a giant piece of shit. It's like, where's the thing? Go to see this other thing, and then it's not where the thing, like...
Oh, no!
I don't
know. It's like a red herring index.
That's not helpful.
One of the other weird paradigms I noticed that we didn't see in other ones, and I'm still not super comfortable with. I get it as a mechanical perspective, but not as a in-game. There's a little wonk is using equipment as class features, kind of like the operative's class feature calls out. They have a cloaking device that does this,
and kind of like the gunslinger-esque.
Except it's just baked into a class feature. It doesn't explain how much you get it or anything. It just kind of is like. You have a cloaking field. It works this way.
It works this way. It's much like the mechanics drone. You've got this little drone thing that is an object that's separate from you, but yet only mechanics can build them. Yeah, it is kind of an interesting design situation.
I'm going to see how that plays a little bit more before I'm like, I get the torches and pitchforks, because that's something I really avoided. I've gone that direction, and we did a book of advanced item use, which is about that stuff, and it's like, and I had a really, and people gave me so much crap for being like, for that. And then like Starfinders, and I'm like, they did it. They did it too. So is there anything that you just need to get off your chest about that book that you're like, I love this or I hate this?
I think it's beautiful. One of the things that I never get over being an editor is, you know, I'm working in Word documents the vast majority of the time. If I'm working in a PDF, it is like the jankiest, most broken PDF ever. Mm-hmm. And so then seeing the materials that I work with become this, and really in the case of Starfinder, I think our graphic design team did a phenomenally good job of making
like
that
it.
Into a
is that pretty?
Gorgeous, gorgeous project.
Yeah, I agree.
I got the developer PDF, and it's made me sad when I was like, oh, no. No art. No. Yeah.
No.
So, do we want to move on to the next section?
Sure.
No, actually. I wanted to ask if, did you get to work on Pathfinder Unchained at all?
I did a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so I have this speculation that...
Okay.
One of the things they were doing when they made Pathfinder Unchained was planning rules that they could translate into the Kingmaker game.
You mean the single-player game that's coming out in the next...
The computer RPG, because normally you can't use the OGL rules to make a computer game. It's like expressly forbidden by it. Yes. That's why
That's a good question. I will actually have to claim ignorance on that one. I am under the impression that the Kingmaker game... was sort of decided on and enacted long after Unchained happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think about timelines. I know Unchained came out about 2 years ago. And so...
Scott, your computer, you have computer game development. When do you think they started working on Kingmaker versus when we saw videos and stuff?
It could be very... There's a lot of tricks you can use. So one of the things with making games is you can literally go ahead and be like, we have built... Depends how you want to build it. Because you can literally go ahead and be like, we're building the entire architecture, and then the last thing we're doing, the art assets. but companies really hate that and developers really like it because they get to go make all pretty things first. What they might have done is gone, all right, we need this thing bare bones functional here so we can have video of it. Go. And that's probably what happened. Though the system itself, the basics are not exceedingly hard. Depends what engine and how much they had to build from scratch. But honestly,
we gotta get one of those Alcat Games motherfuckers up in here.
Yep, but I mean,
we gotta do.
That'd be fun, actually.
That would be kind of cool.
But yeah, definitely, it's one of those things where it depends on a million different factors. But I mean, honestly, a game for that, I mean, 5 years ago, the developing time for a game like that was 2 to 3 years. But I guarantee you it wasn't 2 to 3 years. But that
yeah, because they're still
wasn't
working on it.
Yeah.
So, like.
Okay. So, my guess is probably came out afterwards. I think it's kind of a chicken egg situation where you're going to see something like, okay, so they. We need to make do some dancing around the OGL language. We have this thing already in Unchained. Maybe we can tap into that.
I mean, they could have been just thinking if we make a video game, or maybe we'll use it in, you know, Pathfinder Online or.
Maybe. I mean, I think we see a
although
lot
the
more
Pathfinder Online stuff was already implemented, so it would have
yeah
been a really weird thing.
Right. Well, that may have actually, it may have come the other way. But at that point, I was only doing freelance editing. I didn't have as much insight into the workings of things. I guess I should back up and clarify. I work for Paizo full-time. I'm a full-time contractor in the editorial department. And so that's kind of a cool gig. I'm not a real employee, quote unquote. So I do see a lot of how the sausage is made in the position that I have. What I will say is that a lot of the things that were developed in Unchained stylistically and sort of functionally have carried over into Starfinder. There are a lot of parallel ideas there.
Oh yeah, we definitely could tell that was like the Pathfinder 1.5 kind of deal.
And it works well. The stuff that they saw worked well in Unchained, you can definitely see that translated directly into Starfinder.
Yeah, and there's going to be more of that coming. I mean, I think I'm almost positive it's already been announced, but, you know, the monster creation rules for Alien Archive coming out in November, that's, you know, they're very heavily based on the Unchained monster creation system.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad thing. I like that part of it. So.
I love it. It's so streamlined.
Well, I got to check out. I didn't even know the Unchained had a monster creation system.
Oh,
I'm a big
so
fan
fast
of the standard one.
It's so fast. It's kind of array-based, which is to say, as an editor, you get to edit lots of horrible tables. But as someone who's trying to put together a monster really, really fast, it's really fantastic. I'm a huge fan.
Well, thank you for your sacrifice. Because tables.
Yeah,
it's a thing
PDFs,
I do.
Yes, though, either. God, there was something I was about to say. Oh, I spaced it.
Unchained, Starfinder, Monster Creation, Alien Archive.
Oh, I remember what it is now. Thank you. That worked. So one thing I still am not happy about as much, I like multiclassing, and they basically, there's that whole section in Starfinder that's basically like, you can multiclass, but you won't
but
be as
gonna
good.
But it's going to suck.
It's going to suck. Like, I'm like,
I hate that.
I get they try to replace it a bit more with the archetypes, the all classes archetypes and the themes a little bit. But sometimes I still want to do, and it's like, it does not play it well at all with that.
It doesn't play well. It's really not designed to be able to do that, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of, I mean, to some degree, that gives you a little bit more flexibility within each class, and that you can go diverge more without having to think about, oh, but what if someone takes one level of this and three levels of this?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, you know, I can see where that decision came from, but yeah, if you want to play something that's going to dip a little bit into two, you're going to be really bad at both of them.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. That's part of what I liked about Pathfinder from 3.5. It's like, oh man, I can do all these weird multi-class things. Though, admittedly, it can get a little ridiculous.
I had the multi-class fail experience, you know, the character who just, like, was two levels in five different classes and, you know, too much, burned myself, learned my lesson.
I did a, actually in the NPC code.
I bet your saving throws were great, though.
Yeah. In the NPC code
but I'm sorry,
putting out, I actually have a character who is one level in, like, 10 different classes or something. I played him in a game once, so I actually knew how to build him. It's pretty funny, dude. Wilt, from Saint to Savage or something, like, is what his name is. Because he had a shifting alignment thing, so he can go from, like, Paladin to Barbarian at one point. It's beautiful.
The general way that it works out for multiclassing, depending what system you're in, but generally it's if you multiclass, you get to be, you know, Superman and have lots of different fucking abilities like super weaving and super breath and everything at low levels. But then as people get up in higher level, you lose your potency. So that like extra utility becomes less effective.
Yep, that's exactly what I found. Yep. You know, it's I could do a lot of different things, but I couldn't do any of them well.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of none.
Bingo.
You know what the weird thing about that statement is? The jack of all trades, master of none.
That it means the opposite of.
Yeah, it means
the
opposite.
But better than a master of one.
Yeah. It ends like that, and it's one of those things where it's like, it actually means the opposite.
Well, it's like blood is thicker than water. Doesn't mean what people think.
Yeah, it's the opposite as well. It's like in like the water of the womb, something like that, too.
The blood of the Covenant is thicker than the water of the womb.
Yeah.
So, at least classically, minus the like original religious context, it's like the bonds you choose are, you know, more
stronger
powerful
than the family bonds.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I personally have a lot of identity with that. Not that I dislike my family, but
Something. Yeah, I think gaming is a lot about chosen family.
In the SCA, we always call it chosen family. So yeah. Are we good on Pathfinder?
I could talk about Nazi Smasher. I guess I'll mention it.
Mike, this is good.
Getting the website. This is a weird thing that happened. So Pathfinder is switching over from payment on publication to payment on acceptance.
Which is terribly exciting.
Yeah, it's great. But they sent me an error check. Like, I'm pretty positive that they paid me for Heroes of the Street. They were like, we didn't have the box checked. And I was like, well, do you want me to tear up this check or send it back or what? And then I sent another email. I was like, incidentally, I have this charity project, and if you want me to just keep money and spend it on advertising, like, I'll happily do that. Well, I mean, I don't want to keep ill-gotten gains, but if I'm spending it on a good thing, then whatever.
Right.
I'll take their indirect donation. So I have $140 to spend on it. So then I told at Order of the Amber Die, who are doing, like, a live playthrough on November 30th, which I can't wait to fucking watch. It's going to be so dope. Yeah, like, I got to make character pawns for him, and he's making the maps now, and, like, yeah. It's all right. But, they bought the website URL OperationNaziSmasher.com, and they're going to make like a little website for it. And then we're buying space on D20 PFSRD to tell everybody first about when the Order of the Amber Die thing goes down and then when it releases. And if you want to buy it, that'll be in October, and all profits go to the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and other anti-hate groups, because obviously Operation Nazi Smasher is about smashing Nazis.
Savannah, do you get to contribute to that too?
I did not. I was
not
wanting
directly.
Not directly. I was wanting to actually be part of the Amber Dye playtest, but I have to be at Geek Girl Con that weekend. So I'm going to claim, hey, I put Mike and the Amber Dye founders in the same room.
Yeah.
Look at me.
She did. You did a very good job.
I wrote two rooms. I was going to write a ship golem, but we've cut it, so that couldn't
he be. Said, Adam said that they got two lady players and four dude players, so they'll match up with the like genders of the pre-gen characters.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was like, what? That's like, damn, that's detailed, son. Like, what?
Yep, I've been talking to one of the guys. He's doing one of the Velocis classes, apparently.
Oh, he's the speedster?
So it's like,
Minuteman.
He's like, I will definitely talk to you about the Velocis, Dan. Do not worry.
So that'll be cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like,
news for us after
it's awesome how, and like, we started it, what, August 17th or 20th
right
or something?
After Charlottesville, so yeah.
Yeah, and we've 20,000 word adventure, and like, I'm waiting on three illustrations and then the cover by Claudio Posis, which I'm still just like, what? And because normal Claudio is very expensive. But yeah, he jumped in and offered to volunteer. And then John Wick might do the foreword, and yeah. Everything's on schedule, and we should be able to get some money into the hands of charities before Christmas.
Cool.
Ooh.
Punch some Nazis.
Nice stuff.
Yeah.
So,
That's good. I think 5e news and speculation.
So, 5e news. What you got, Mike? I've been playing it. I haven't been reading about it.
I have the Imperia Kickstarter. So I'm the crowdfunding engineer and media coordinator for Frank Mentzer's Imperia Kickstarter. Frank Mentzer is one of the guys who originally worked on D&D, like way back in the day. He made the Red Box, which is for a lot of people their very first introduction to D&D, because that was the first thing that got translated into other languages. So he has this campaign setting called Imperia, which technically is on the continent of Aquaria, which is on the same world as Greyhawk. Greyhawk exists on the continent of Orid across the Great Sea, or Salinoran Sea, I think it might be called. And it's all on Orth, like O-E-R-T-H. But this is not connected to that directly. He has this note from Gary that gave him explicit permission to print his own Imperium material and like what he can't reference and can reference and so on. It's very specific. And he's already printed it before in the past, but like now he's making this like huge effort to release an old school role-playing box set.
Cool.
And I'll be talking about it for the next 2 months. It has taken over my fucking life. But no, I'm very happy and honored to be working on it. But yeah, right? Like, I mean, it's awesome to be strapped to the rocket. It's just like, God, for once, I'd like to have a seat and a parachute and like a helmet. Just one time. Oh my
Would
God.
Would you really, Mike? I don't think you'd know what to do with yourself with a reasonable schedule.
You know, just
you'd be like a parachute. What do I do with this? Wear it? Wrap it around myself? Are they shoes? Yeah.
Shoulder. Put on the shoulder.
There you go.
But yeah, it's gonna be really dope, and he's got all these people have been crawling out of the woodwork. I'm not allowed to release the list of like celebrity, industry legend folk, but it is very daunting. Yeah.
What you said, Gary Gygax is coming back from the dead to write this? My God.
Grab a shovel.
Yeah, no,
it's
no,
that
Gary.
Important.
And he has not talked to the Gygax entire state. He has talked to several Gygax family members, and they're all super cool about it. So,
cool.
Yeah, we're launching on October 2nd, and you can go to worldsofimperia.com, E-M-P-Y-R-E-A, and there's a newsletter you can sign up for, and I don't know, I'm the media coordinator too, so I have this giant calendar of press things, and there will be a lot of stuff in the 6 weeks around October 2nd. Podcasts and Reddit and articles.
That's coming up so much sooner than I really want it to.
Yeah. Same
time.
Boat.
Holy God. Hey, I got a thing for us. It's Pathfinder. I hope you don't mind. I just literally got the message like 2 seconds ago. We just had someone, a fan of ours, go convert everything that a bunch of stuff we wrote to 5e.
That's cool.
And they have prettier artwork than I had for my own book.
That's awesome. Fan products are the best, dude.
That's it's Cody Martin. So if you guys haven't at Cody,
oh,
Cody. Awesome. Yeah. But Cody,
that's actually how Nazi Smasher started, because Steve, for whatever, I think it was because I was running some games for him at a convention. He made all these World War II superhero pre-gens, and they were just like sitting around, and then Nazis showed up, and I was like, well, fuck me. I have all these superheroes.
Right?
Well, fuck me.
Pretty cool artwork on there, but it's like, it's a much cooler piece than like I had, and I'm like, all right, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he's not making a profit from it.
No, and I gave him express permission to do any of this, convert anything over to 5e, because I'm not converting it over due to the product identity stuff and the IP stuff. So he's doing it as a fan project, and I'm like, go for it, bro. I may even link on our site to his stuff. So.
Cool.
Max would like to say that he is personally against the Gygaxian ideology of the GM's word is law, but they also had it where the GM should know every minute of every encounter and the weather shifts even landscape on the land map you're supposed to have made, which is in line with Max's complaints about the way I run a game. So I can see how you feel that way, Max.
I think you should have narrative control. You're not in a real world. You're in a narrative. That's me.
I mean, I don't know. The way I do it is like literally, if you don't follow the plot, like, that's okay.
Exactly.
Like, go and do
this
other thing, and we'll do it, and there will be consequences for it. But like, I'm not your mom. Do what you want. Like,
no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like, the GM doesn't need to know every nook and cranny because he can create those on the fly, or she. Or
oh, you see,
whatever.
That's what I do. Like,
yeah,
whenever
I
want to do an adventure, I just end up making a campaign setting instead.
Yep, exactly.
So, like, it's not a very time effective way to run your games. Everyone, just like FYI, not the
it's
best
really
way
not.
To do it. It's fun and awesome, but
I have like 4 sitting there because of that. Yep, that's exactly. Mike, we have the same brain here when it comes to GMing.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
a scary
you guys
thought.
Really don't want to play Shadowrun? Fine! Here's how we play Shadowrun in Pathfinder. Yeah!
It only took me 24 hours and I haven't slept and I just downed 4 monsters and here's 40 pages of content. I've gotten them edited, of course. You know?
Yeah, it's like, I think my heart's fluttering slightly. Maybe I should sit down for a second.
My left arm is hurting a bit.
After I can see clearly, we're gonna continue this.
Yep.
I'm gonna roll my d20. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, where am I? So, are we good to talk about other RPG stuff?
Yeah, I don't think I have any other 5e news.
I don't, unless you guys do.
Liz, say anything?
Not that I can talk about. I know, like, okay. There's so much cool stuff coming!
No! So guys, you heard it here first. There's cool stuff coming in 5e.
Sure. Yes.
Exclusive.
I'm in totally the wrong section. I'm really good at this, guys.
So, Mike, you got something about RPG miniatures?
Well, we got a new section.
Oh, yes, our new section.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the people I have to talk to for Imperia, because, like I said, it's taking over my life. And I mentioned to him, because he's like way into the Euro market for gaming and stuff, I was like, so what do you think about like Games Workshop? Is like, are they panicking? Do they see the blood on the wall? And he's like, no. They do this every like 4 or 5 years. And he doesn't expect the like cost for home 3D printing and miniatures to like hit like an effective point. Because although the material you use is really cheap, it's the maintenance on your 3D printer that like eats up your fucking money. So it costs like 5 times as much right now to reprint like a Warhammer miniature at home as opposed to buying it at the store. Now, he said 15 years. I was like, I don't know about that. I feel like technology is way faster than that. I'm thinking like 5 years.
But like, probably, but for right worried. Now.
Yeah, much longer, further away than I thought it was, actually. Like, I was like 2 years maybe, but like, yeah, 5. Yeah, that's a while. So, yeah, that was my news. That was all. I was just
okay.
Something that, because I know I talk about it a lot, and I love,
yeah, we definitely
I love Warhammer 40K so much. So, like, I'm on the freelancer list for that motherfucker.
I'm kind of on the flip side of that. I'm actually a huge fan of Hero Forge because you can customize your mini and have them printed exactly for you. Yeah, look, right. And
right here.
Yeah. I have like six downstairs. Yeah.
Yeah, I have Old Man, but like Old Man was $30.
Yeah.
Which is...
Right. And so it's sort of like, is that, you know, if I got my own, what would that look like? But the maintenance costs, I have no idea. I don't own a 3D printer.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. And he was like, it costs a lot of money to replace it. If you're replacing like a regular part, it's like, I forget what he said, a minimum of like $25. And then if you're replacing like a metal part, it's like up in $100 or more.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so like,
and I assume that the warranty on those things is not...
doesn't exist.
I would probably not amazing. Yeah.
Well, probably not for things that require routine maintenance.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
there we go.
I mean, yeah, I guess you can't just sit there and print up Gaunt's Ghost Army and then not have to replace parts on your 3D printer before you're done.
Right. No, that's legit.
So, that was a cool insight that I got. We mentioned this a little bit at the end of the thing, but I wanted to bring it up again. Liz, were you at Gen Con?
I was.
Oh, okay, she looked so awesome at Gen Con. We need some pictures of that.
It's like 4 feet away from me. I can take my headphones off and show you pieces.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. That was like a throwdown, all right.
Got this.
Oh, I have seen pictures of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
this
no,
is
that
my
is...
static arc rifle. It is built on the specs from the Starfinder core rulebook. Right down to the fact that it has a stun setting.
Yeah.
Love it.
Very
and,
cool.
And we've got another one here, but my whole guest bed right now is covered with armor pieces and
that's so cool.
Costuming bits.
That is amazing.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, okay, so what I want to say was branding has picked up a lot since last year, and I'm thinking that like the big businesses are starting to realize like, oh, these people grew from like a billion to a billion four last year. Like, let's get in, you know? I don't know. Did you notice that? Because, like, there's always branding at Gen Con, but, like, I was, like, everywhere I turned in the dealer's room.
Like the Bob Ross stuff that we talked about last week?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Bob,
oh,
that
mean,
was
like,
probably
licensed coming. Product.
Yeah, licensed
basically.
Product. Yeah. I mean, there was no giant floating Pikachu balloon, unfortunately, this year. I really like that, actually. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It seemed to me like everywhere you looked, like there's Street Fighter something or Dragon Ball Z this or
Buffy. There's Buffy stuff.
Oh,
I think
Buffy, sure.
Yeah, I feel like maybe there might be something happening. Sort of thinking in a meta sense, if sort of the larger world of intellectual properties is realizing that gamer culture actually has a large fan base and a lot of money to spend, mm-hmm. Or at least that's where we're willing to put our money. And so there are probably a lot of people who would not have considered a licensed deal, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago, who now realize, hey, wow, this is actually a good move. Let's do it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So it wasn't just my paranoia. Mm-hmm. Like, there is some...
There's
some
a lot, yeah.
Places. Okay.
Oh, no, Mike, there's totally someone out to get you, but the licensing, you were separate. Yeah.
Everyone's out to get me. All right. That's it. That's all I got for RPG business.
Cool.
I'm out of here.
Yeah. Same.
So, other RPG...
Other media of interest.
Yeah. So, I got a few things here. A lot of Netflix stuff actually really weirdly just all happened this week. There's a new Magic School Bus, but it's not Miss Frizzle. It's her younger sister.
Oh, is that her sister?
Yeah, it's okay. Her younger sister, but Miss Frizzle's also in the series. Mm. I don't know if I'm in love with the art style, but it'll
as long as the school buses are the same size,
yeah.
I don't think there'll be a problem.
No, it's fine. The art style, I'm a little iffy on. There's a fourth Powerpuff Girl now.
Oh.
And her art style is completely different, and it doesn't fit the scheme. And I'm like,
Magic School Bus on Netflix. Apparently, there's two Miss Frizzle.
I'm holding judgment on that one because it looks okay. Apparently,
I wasn't real enthused about the new Powerpuff Girls reboot anyway.
Yeah.
Same size school bus, but that's the issue. Yeah.
The other things are so that big deal with Disney and Netflix finally officially broke, and they said out loud at like a big convention recently, they're like, guess what? We're pulling all of our stuff, all the Marvel movies, all the Disney movies, off Netflix. And
when does that take effect?
And that sucks, because Netflix just took a big hit, too, so they are not looking so good.
Yeah, when does that take effect, do you know?
They're pulling them off soon, I think, like in a month.
Does that include all the series that Netflix has made?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say.
See.
So, like, Defenders and the,
yes,
the series
stay.
Will stay there. Okay.
Because that's Netflix produced, but, like, currently you can go watch, you know, Doctor Strange on there.
But you won't be able to anymore.
Which kind of sucks.
Where are they going? Do they have their own shindig?
They're trying to launch their own thing, which is interesting because they're launching their own thing. And because they own ESPN, they're actually doing the same app but different service.
So you have to pay twice. This is stupid. When are people going to realize that let me back that up a little bit, because one of the things I've said many times, and I will credit myself for saying this in the past, is that I really wish I could buy cable by channel, that I could just buy the cable channels that I actually want to watch and not get 120 for garbage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, on one hand, it kind of sucks that all of these companies are trying to do their own pay for service subscription plan, but if you were paying $100 a month for cable, I don't know, I haven't had cable since college, I don't know. But, you know, if you're going to pay some amount for cable anyway, you know, what happens if you divide that out amongst the providers that you actually want? And is that basically buying your cable channels a la carte? So maybe I'm not as cranky about that as my knee-jerk reaction is.
Here's my thing, though, right? I have a set amount I'm willing to spend on entertainment every month. If you force me to choose, I'm going to choose the more diverse providers. So I will choose Netflix. I'll choose a few other ones. I'm not going to choose the specific thing that does that, though I say that, and I just bought YouTube Red because I want to see the Game Grumps series. Otherwise, like, I don't know if I'm going to, like, I'll be like Sci-Fi had some really good stuff, and I wanted to watch it, but they're like, you either have to have cable or pay us a monthly fee. And I'm like, sorry, I don't have money for it.
Okay, so I've mentioned this in previous shows, but Liz was not around. So the issue here is that it's an entrenched utility, the same way that your electric or your water is. So it's not going to be like it's going to be worse than the taxi cabs versus Uber and Lyft, because these people already have like literally entrenched stuff in the ground,
right,
everywhere. Mm-hmm. So like they're not just going to drop them. There's a huge, huge support industry for that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're gonna fight tooth and nail, and they're gonna make this as shitty as possible. I mean, like, it's never gonna be like, here's your one channel, like the YouTube is God, but
no,
YouTube is gonna be the head god. I don't think that's gonna change, you know.
YouTube Red is doing really shitty, by the way.
I don't know. I never use YouTube Red. We just
watch
YouTube.
That's the point.
Like,
I'm saying,
I watch the local news on YouTube now. It's great. they it's so much better than watching it on TV.
They're not doing as well as they should be, and they're like, YouTube Red, we invested all this money. Come check it out. And, like, no one's doing it.
Oh. Yeah. I was, so yeah, I and they, like they did the, like, question. Free summer.
What, yeah, sure.
I have this thing set in my head that YouTube Red was, like, YouTube's, concession to having pornography. I assume that that is an incorrect assumption.
Yeah, so YouTube Red is their, It's like their premium thing now.
That's a branding problem. They should have thought that one through.
What it is they have a bunch of exclusive shows they put together. They work with YouTube creators and gave them a bunch of money to produce an actual show.
Wait, did you think it was like they were partnering up with RedTube or something?
That's probably exactly what I thought.
I mean, that is exactly what it sounds like. I never thought of it that way, but that is very reasonable. Now we know why they're doing so poorly.
Everyone's just like, why am I going to pay for porn? There's like free porn all over the internet.
Exactly, exactly. And investors are like, you know, we can't really publicly.
So I call a bunch of companies every day. As part of something, my day job, and I've seen some bad companies. There's one that's called the Hog Slap, and I'm just like, what is that?
I hope they're a barbecue restaurant.
I think there's something they actually are something to do with hogs, but I don't know what they do because I didn't pick up the phone.
They probably slap hogs.
I mean, that's what I
sounds
assumed.
Pretty straightforward to me. This sounds like
that
my next
TV character.
That
doesn't sound like solid business.
always hogs to slap.
I am Varys Brandywise, the slapper of hogs. Smack.
And we have Mike's next character.
You are a pig, sir. Max wanted to say that YouTube is shitty to its creators, but that he likes YouTube Red because you use it for music, and there's no ads or anything.
And you can also put it in the background sucks. On your phone, which is should be a functionality they had to begin with. But, you know, charge us $10 a month. Charge us $10 a month for it. You get my money like, from Hulu, so.
Like I said, we watch YouTube like almost all the time. Like.
Yep. Other things. Let's see.
Threadbare, which is an RPG, we should have talked about other RPG business, but that's fine.
Yeah,
What's Threadbare?
It just didn't feel like it should have. I don't know. Maybe I should put it up there, but basically, I just want to mention it's so cool. You can play as like patchwork stuffed animals and stuff, and you fight like evil gremlins and whatever.
Ooh.
And
it sounds like an accompaniment to Small Fears, where like you play little kids fighting monsters under the bed.
Well, the thing with this is, it's like all about entropy and stuff. So it's like when you take damage, you have to like stitch yourself up. So by the end of the game, you're like all patchwork and everything, and you can add stuff and subtract. I don't know.
Owen did a thing that was like a Pathfinder thing where you played dolls. It was like that.
Gonzo 2, we released the Sparkle Princess and the. What was it called? It was like the teddy bear race as well that fit with that. So that was kind of this along that lines too.
Quick prop for a game that is awesome you can find for cheap. It's called Naughty Bear. And in Naughty Bear, you play a bear that is naughty on the island of bears. And they're all teddy bears, and you go around like murdering them in terrible, horrible ways.
I was gonna say, I think I remember this.
It's a really fun, very challenging game. Very challenging. All I'm right. still like not even halfway through it.
So, Mike, I got a This isn't really a story. This is a confession. I got this. I play tested stuff at my college. I went to college for game design, and I know poor choice, but I recovered from that.
I went to college for English, so
I went to college for music.
Okay, so let's say my
you're in good company, Scott.
My master's in MBA, so we're all good here. But anyway, so we had this game. I was testing a new system. And it devolved into, I was like, all right, we're going to play a bunch of kids, like little rascal styles and have some fun. It devolved into what I can only describe as the darkest game I've ever had. Because they had to try to use their props they had as, like, weapons. And one of them had a hamster and a ball. And it started crawling in someone's eye and out the other side. And, like, really bad in the descriptions. And, like, by the end of it, we're all sitting at each other, like, looking at each other across the table, like, I don't want to play this game anymore. I'm like... This whole thing's ripped. We're done. Nope. Good. We had kids with baseball bats hitting people's skulls, and I'm like, "All right. Nope. We're not playing this system anymore. It devolved too quickly. Bye. Nope. I'm starting from scratch." So
Lord of the Flies.
It devolved into Lord of the Flies.
Oh yeah.
It meant to be Little Rascals.
When I was a kid, one of my friends
wait, did you change someone's
head
with a baseball bat?
No.
Okay.
But
good.
She kept a she was pretty weird. She played a lot of Enya. Lifetime movies were on all the time. She drank a lot of wine. And there was a 6-foot-tall pink teddy bear that she kept in the living room, like, sitting in one of the armchairs for, like, 2 years.
Oh, God.
And, like, I can't even remember what her reasoning for having the teddy bear there was, but, like, there was no getting her to remove it. Like, there was just no way. Like, I think eventually they just, like, snuck in and took it. And just got rid of it. But yeah, it was so creepy. Because you'd, like, walk in to go, like, grab soda or something in the fridge during the break, and, like, in the shadow, like, backlit by the fucking Lifetime TVs, and, like, Enya, and, like, this fucking 6-foot-tall pink teddy bear there in the corner. It was very memorable.
I dated a girl who had a cutout of Edward Cullen, who she hit around the house to scare the shit out of me.
I love this girlfriend of yours.
No, she was a psycho.
That's good. It reminds me of the time that my college dorm mates took the the Night of the Living Dummy. They had that dummy and they set it in a chair in the living room, and they bad.
All right, we seem to have diverged a little bit here.
Max also wanted to add that Good Game, which is a show co-written by Jesse Cox and the Game Grumps.
So yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yep, that's the one.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Since man writing, but it's a pretty decent comedy.
It's
and then
it's
he talks about
funny.
How he looks to getting a job because he's getting a computer engineering degree. So good for you, Max. I hope you do.
Hey, yeah.
But yeah, Good Game is really
You can support
funny.
To the Game Designers Relief Fund and support all of us who got less good grades.
But yeah, Good Game, I'll mention it again, is really funny. It's written by the guy who wrote Rick and Morty. It has the Game Grumps on it. They both have very different, or they're very similar to what they are on the show, but they are still very funny. Dan has got this very, like, comedian in a comedy vibe going on, and Aaron has this, he actually has legitimate screen presence, and he's a good actor. But Dan just sits out there, like, super hippie dude, like, he's really damn funny too. Speaking of Rick and Morty, the guy who voices him, did you guys hear when he called
the prank call Joel? Yeah,
Joel Osteen's church. Oh my god,
it was pretty good. He gets the line. I mean, I don't want to ruin it. You should check it out.
Yeah, go watch it. It's he calls a prayer line, and the responses he gets are Ricky Tikki Pabby. They're good.
Yeah.
I
did want to mention, because I brought this up like last night with a friend at the bar. I'm looking forward to soon getting VR capability, and I've been playing a lot of VR games whenever I get the chance. And one of them was called VR Accounting. It's written by Dan Harmon.
Yeah. Over here.
And like, it loads you in, and you're like standing there in this office, and they're talking to you, and they tell you to like find this tape, and you load it in, and then it like sucks you into another world. And basically, I can't imagine a user interface that would have worked for that game if it wasn't in a VR environment.
That's cool. I love using the medium.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, there's a lot of cool things about it, but, like, that was I'm thinking on all the stuff I played so far, and I played probably a couple dozen games. I got in a couple hours in. The tilt brush is the best. It's the sculpting thing.
Yeah.
It's fucking the best. Yes. It's just, like, their paint, but, like, it's so cool. But yeah, the VR accounting thing was really the first one where I was like, oh shit, you could not do this without this. Birdly was a little different because it had a hydraulic machine involved. But like, yeah.
So,
Birdly was the best. If you ever get the chance to do Birdly, you should. You should look that shit up. It lets you be a bird. You feel like you're flying. It's fucking amazing. 100%. Oh my god.
So are we, we're going to go on to the Kickstarters here?
Yeah. Is that the next section, Kickstarters? Yeah.
So can I say... There's an update to one of the ones we have here. City of Seven Seraphs has just funded during the show. Congrats, man. Congrats. Well done. They're already a few $100 over it, too. That was a close one. It came down to the last, like, 2 days or something. It's going to go way over.
Yep, they were just above 48 hours when I last looked.
Yep.
I was actually on the page looking at it just to see how it was doing, and I watched it click over to get funded.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
I was like, whoa!
Yeah, so congrats, Christopher. That is awesome. He told me today he's doing the Panpari artwork.
Congrats, man.
So, but yeah, that's cool. That's kind of the first thing I wanted to just talk about in there.
myself. I did, didn't I?
What else we got here?
What's he doing? Was there any Seventh Seraph stuff that you want to talk about, Liz?
From my exceptionally nerdy spot, I just think it's a really, really cool idea, and I've been talking to Kristen about working as part of the editorial team on it. So
cool,
awesome!
I'm excited.
Be kind to the Watchtower and the Pon Academia.
I shine everything equally.
For anyone who is not familiar, this is like a planar city, not unlike Sigil. It's like a capstone for a campaign. So after you've finished it and you're 18th level, where do you go? You go to the city of Seven Seraphs. Although
so
it is applicable
compatible.
Pathfinder compatible. And you can play from like first level on onward. Although Max,
you just gotta be careful.
You would not like it because it is in the style of Mike's GMing. And they will pound you down if they are 20th level counters.
Also, they're probably not sniper rifles.
Probably not sniper rifles.
So, what other ones we got here? Legendary Starfinder?
Oh, yeah. So, Legendary Games is working on a couple of projects for Starfinder, which I can talk about because I'm working on them. So one of the things we're doing is taking the Legendary Planet adventure path and converting that into Starfinder rules. It's a very sword and planet style adventure.
Ooh, I love that.
And so it works in Pathfinder rules, but it also fits really, really well to the Starfinder rules. So
cool.
we've been converting that over about one every probably 6 weeks to 2 months. You'll see those come out. They're big volumes. They'll carry your group for a while. And then sort of building on that is a second project, which is a large bestiary compendium for both Starfinder and 5e. That's a Kickstarter that's been going for about a week. And that is funded, and the stretch goals are really participatory, so you can get in and have a lot of input into what the final product will look like.
Hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
I don't have any other ones, honestly.
I do not either. Looks like we have... that's just the link there for the Starfinder stuff. That's all I got. Also, as a time check, it is 6:11, which I believe gets us 19 minutes from our two-hour block.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Liz, you got a few minutes. If there's anything you just want to... talk about? Is there anything that's burning in your heart right now that you just need to tell the world?
Not really. I mean, one of the things about being an editor is that, like, you know, nobody becomes an editor because they want to get famous. We are really, really behind the scenes people. And I think there's some really cool stuff going on in the RPG industry right now, whereas the industry is growing and a lot of publishers are getting more experienced and further developed. We're seeing a lot more investing in that kind of production quality that involves editors, so like, yay, I get more work. But it's it's always going to be a behind the scenes thing, and you know, we're just here quietly doing our thing and making stuff awesome, most of the time because we like what we do.
Well, can I ask you a question then? What do you think about DM's Guild and similar programs?
Tell me a little bit more about it.
Oh, so you're not familiar with
it? It's not one I'm familiar with.
Okay,
no.
All right. I feel like they should because I have an enormous bias.
Let's say, Mike, you and I are both in the production side of things, so in the formatting, putting them out stuff, so I think we're kind of the most biased on this, but we hear it a lot.
Savannah, can you explain what the DM's Guild is for Liz?
I don't know that I'm familiar enough, honestly. All right. I know that we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but it's not my area.
Official Dungeons & Dragons Marketplace. And you are allowed to write stuff using the Forgotten Realms and other Wizards of the Coast material and IP. But here's the deal. Everything you write becomes owned by the DM's Guild.
Right. Yes, I heard a little bit about this when it first launched and then promptly apparently forgot all of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it's been going on. And they take a bigger share, so they take 50% rather than 35%, which is normally what Drive-Thru does.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's happened, or what I think has happened, is that it's gotten this, like, notice me senpai thing going on, right? Where it's a bunch of people who are amateurs, they don't take it very professionally, they don't spend very much money creating their products. So there's, and like the ownership, the IP thing, and the extra cut makes it not feasible for real publishers to engage with it.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like, really disturbing to me because, like, I thought that it would just fall flat on its face, which is kind of what happened, right? Like, you don't find anything really on there that's worth very much money, and or well, that you'll make much money on, right? I think everything is pretty much $10 or under. I don't think there's anything under $10. And then Vampire decided to do the same thing. What, right? Isn't Vampire doing it? And then, like,
something similar.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of places starting to do similar stuff, and Morris was talking about doing one for What's Old is New, and I was like, no, please don't. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's a disturbing trend that I do not like myself.
Right. I mean, my first knee-jerk reaction to that is that, My knee-jerk reaction to that is if you're writing something and you're handing over total ownership of it to somebody else, that raises my hackles. But then I sort of think about that and I'm like actually most RPG design that you're doing as a contractor or a freelancer is also sort of under that. But if you're designing your own stuff and publishing it yourself, you should be retaining ownership of that. And I feel pretty strongly about that. You know, that if you're, especially if you're not getting as big a cut on it and you're, you know, that you're making certain other sacrifices, like, then you're also handing away ownership of it so that if, like, if you came up with a really badass idea that was mechanically fantastic, then, like, Hasbro can go make more money off of it, but screw you. I'm not keen on that. That makes me very uncomfortable. I guess I'm a much bigger supporter of things like open game systems where you can make things that are compatible but maintain the ownership of them.
Yeah.
Well, this feeds into my paranoia about, like, the Hasbro Russian mafia treatment of the third party market for 5e.
I feel like I have, I mean, I sort of have some inherent bias in that just based on my employer, so I can't, sure. I guess I'm not going to say anything more about that. we'll leave it there.
Yeah. Paizo is great at supporting third party publishers, and I wish that everyone took their example.
I wish more. I'm really glad for the companies that do. I'm glad to see a lot of people following that model.
All right. Oh, a funny caveat. So I still don't think there's been any news on this, but on the D&D Beyond website, they have like a homebrew thing you can add your own monsters and stuff. I'm still pretty sure you're not allowed to take your stuff from DM's Guild, which I'll remind everyone is the official Dungeons & Dragons marketplace, and put it on the official Dungeons & Dragons homebrew site for their online tools.
But you can't put stuff in both places.
No, you cannot. Because you lose ownership of it and becomes owners of DM Guild.
No. also, Liz, you mentioned to me your novel. Is that something that you want to talk about? Or
yeah, sure. I mean, I can. I can't, you know, it's not like I'm going to... I don't have anything exciting. Like, I got a book deal with Tor for $1 million and it'll be out next week. But I've been writing for years and years and years. And I'm at the point where I have moved from writing to editing. And for all that I'm an editor for a day job, and for all that I'm, you know, people say that when you're writing a book, like, the hardest part is to sit down and write, and they are fucking liars, because editing is way worse. This has been particularly challenging, but it's, you know, I'm moving through it, and I've got some beta readers giving me really good feedback, and I have, like, a trajectory towards going out and going after publication, so that's, you know, the big scary thing in my life right now is, like, this is the big unknown of whether this is going to fly or not.
I was going to ask you, as someone who is primarily an editor, how do you, like, they always say, oh, turn off your inner editor and just write. I don't have an inner editor anymore. Like, it's just all of me. And, like, I'll write a paragraph and it's hard.
You know, I ascribe to two things. I actually am a passionate advocate for NaNoWriMo. I think the National Novel Writing Month program is a really good incentive to get a lot of support in getting off your butt and just making words happen. And that's what I've actually used to generate the habits to make words happen. You can always fix words later, but you can't fix nothing. So that's been really helpful for me. The other one I ascribe to is write drunk, edit sober. I do a lot of writing with an adult beverage nearby, and I found that really helps. That and good immersive music, and a good,
we've talked about that before.
Yeah, I use, you know, I have a different sort of like computer workspace for when I'm writing. I use Scrivener. I don't have other stuff open, so when I'm in Scrivener, I'm not editing, I'm writing. And so it sort of is you're changing gears in a different brain space for me.
John Cleese has this awesome, oh, go ahead.
I was also going to ask what sort of adult beverage, because it's not necessarily true for everybody, but I know lots of folks are affected differently depending on what they drink.
You know, I've found that to be true too, and I've only found it out really recently. I'm very excited by this, and I'm doing a lot of experimenting. It really depends on what I'm doing and what I'm trying to turn out. I am a passionate advocate for Aldi grocery stores. They're a German chain that does really cheap groceries.
And they own Trader Joe's.
And they also, yeah, they're own, yeah, same company that does Trader Joe's. But at Aldi, you can get, you guys are going to laugh at me, you can get these containers of white German wine. German white wine, just like generic, inexpensive white wine. You get a box for like $11, and it's like 12 glasses of wine, and so it's a super, super cost-effective way to drink.
Yeah, I was gonna say, box wine has actually come a long way from
It's come a very long way, and it's very common in Europe, and you know, so I sound ridiculous saying this. I also sound like I'm totally a drunkard. I go through maybe a box every 2 weeks with my spouse, so that's sort of my go-to, because I'm a contractor and a freelancer, and I don't have a lot of money.
So one of the things is, when I had to write Necropunk, you know what I ended up doing? I got Red Bull and vodka. And then more
That's
Monster.
A terrible plan.
And then everything.
Professional Goblins Podcast does not advocate the use of uppers and downers simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
Scott's views are entirely his own.
It got a lot of stuff written.
I was going to say, probably got the job done.
It was great.
Oh, I'm sure, but...
Oh, I'll be right back.
I have to try different types of booze, because I can't drink and write every time I try to sit down.
Probably the same things affect different people differently. So, mm-hmm. And also, like, I should be really straightforward. My father was a recovered alcoholic, and you know, it's not for everyone. And if that's not your thing, then you absolutely no pressure. And there are, you know, tea, hot cocoa, no beverages at all. You know, Girl Scout cookies, whatever floats your boat to help you, you know, get into the headspace. Really, is more than anything else, is what gets you into where you need to be to tell that story.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, so John Cleese has this awesome lecture he did in like 1984 at some German television, whatever, doesn't matter. If you look up John Cleese creativity, you'll find it. Basically, he explains how there's this creative play mode and work mode. So like when you're filling out forms and stuff, most of the time you're in the work mode, generally. But when you're in the play mode, that's when it's best to do creative stuff. So like, and this is like, you know, one of the dudes who found Monty Python, so obviously one of the most creative motherfuckers on the planet. He was like, yeah, so like after the first hour or so of riffing and hanging out, that's when we'd start to get good material. But like there's that hour where it would take us to like get in the right, you know, mode of creativity and stuff. Yeah.
So I'm being a little overtime right now. So Also, I wanted to show you guys something. I brought this back from Vegas. This is a, it goes around your head. It is a... thing that is like 40 ounces of something, and that something was Red Bull and vodka. So, dude,
Scott's views are again entirely his own.
His own, yes. Yep. Well, I was gonna mention, you've never done a bag night, where just get a box of wine and everyone rolls around in like sheets with the bag of wine over their shoulder, and
that sounds wonderful.
No, it is. It is.
I have no idea what this.
Oh my god, yeah, it's a great thing. So everybody who walks in the party, you just give them a bag of wine. And then, like, a sheet. And then they prepare themselves like they're, like, old, you know, Grecian people. And then you just keep the bag of wine slung over your shoulder all night and drink from it until it's gone.
Okay.
So, guys, don't drink and drive. Don't drink and...
Do not drink and drive. Do not drink more than you can handle.
Do drink and write, apparently.
Don't drink and drive.
That is true, too.
Also, don't drink
if you're not of legal drinking age in your place of residence.
Also true.
Don't drink if it's illegal to do so.
Yes.
So, guys...
There we go. Blink it.
Can we wrap soon? Are we...
Yeah, are we doing Munchausen?
I don't think I can go tonight.
I don't think my kidneys are up to Munchausen, and we're past time.
All right. Guys, once again, thank you for joining us.
Liz, thank you for coming on the show. It was awesome.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
It's been great.
All right, guys. Have a nice one.